Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Country Publications and Now Newspapers. Joining me is JP Cadoret of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. He's from his mobile office driving around Milwaukee land trying to talk to some Major League Baseball draftees from our area. We had a lot of them. We're going to talk about that in just one second. Wanted to let you guys know you can find the Initial Reaction podcast on Stitcher and iTunes. Stitcher is my personal favorite app on my Android phone, but iTunes is a lot more familiar, I realize. If you check us out on iTunes, be sure to give us a rating if you could. That will get the word out a little bit more, get our name out there a little bit more if you like what you hear, if you are a fan of Wisconsin prep sports. So thanks for listening. Thanks for checking us out. And without further ado, let's get going with what we have this week. JP, my understanding is you are driving all over the greater Milwaukee. Tell me about it.
Just general Waukesha County today. Bouncing around as I may.
That sounds like a lot of fun, JP. You, as my understanding, are out and about meeting various people affiliated with Major League Baseball teams as of this past weekend, including Brian Keller, formerly of Germantown.
Yeah.
He was just drafted by the New York Yankees, right?
Yeah, which is cool because I never got drafted, which is shocking, I know, because of how good I was at baseball, but... Wisconsin had a fantastic weekend in the draft, with Gavin Lux going in the first round, the kid out of Verona going also in the first night, and then, you know, about 15 other players with state ties that played their high school ball here. It was a great, great weekend for Wisconsin baseball, which we don't say a lot. Wisconsin is not a fertile recruiting ground, according to, well, everybody associated with baseball, but this was fantastic. So it was a good weekend, and I'm out trying to talk to as many local Wisconsin draftees as possible.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. Also wanted to dive into a little bit about the WIAA postseason and some observations. Kind of had something that's sort of a recurring theme where you had, in soccer and golf in particular, sectionals that were really crowded with top-ranked teams and then other sectionals that weren't. And we've talked a little bit about the fairness of that and how if there's any way to address it. So we'll dive into that a little bit. And then at the end, we're going to sit down with Kyle Johnson, the new boys basketball coach at Greenfield High School. He played at Greendale right up the road, where his brother Ryan is now the head coach and has been for the last few years. Kyle was on his staff, and so we talked a little bit about coming over to Greenfield, some stories from when he played, when I actually covered him in high school, so had some pretty crazy memories of his high school career. So we will talk about that at the end of the interview. And then getting back to the MLB draft, other guys that you mentioned, Gavin Lux of Kenosha Indian Trail, who was drafted. They're Nate Brown of Arrowhead. They're going to play in the state boys baseball, well, not boys baseball, just state baseball tournament on on Tuesday, beginning Tuesday. Arrowhead is in Appleton for that. They'll be the favorite to win. He was drafted by the Yankees, like Keller, who's now at UW-Milwaukee, as we said, formerly of Germantown. Ty Weber of Menominee Falls was drafted by the Reds. He's probably going to wind up going to Illinois, but still to play college ball, that is, but he was still taken. Kenosha Tremper, I believe, had draft selection. Guys that...
Justin Lavey.
Yeah.
In the 39th round, had already committed to Louisville, which is really good at baseball, except for the bottom of the ninth inning against UCSB. I didn't know what inning. I just know it was the bottom, and they weren't very good at that current time.
Yeah, I was paying attention to Louisville because the Brewers' top selection on Thursday night, a guy by the name of Corey Ray, taken with the 5th overall pick. He's an outfielder. He was playing for Louisville. He's the team's leadoff hitter and did not actually have a great super regional showing, but he was on the field. There was a guy from Eau Claire buddy John Casper alerted me to his heritage, hailing from Eau Claire. Jake Sparger, he pitched in that first game against Cal Santa Barbara. So I was watching Louisville a little bit, and then they got walked off on a grand slam. It was 3-0. The pitcher was awesome, the starter, and it just all got out of hand in the ninth. Very crazy game. So Louisville, Corey Ray will be able to sign with the Brewers any day, right? Because Louisville's season is over.
In theory, he's ready to go. Yeah, the walk-off was I believe it was a first-round draft pick against a guy with 26 career at-bats. But that's baseball, as they say.
Yeah, that is baseball. What a wild moment. I mean, if you hit a game-winning grand slam to send your team to the College World Series, that doesn't actually happen outside of backyards and people's imaginations. That doesn't actually happen.
Yeah. But in this so case, that was fun, and I just feel like the MLB draft was more interesting this year. There are just so many more different angles, like with Gavin Lux being, you know, one of the highest ever drafted out of Wisconsin, with the Brewers having such a high pick. With guys at UWM and UW Whitewater and all over the place being drafted, there was just a lot of local things to follow while the draft was going on, which doesn't necessarily happen every year.
I think the proliferation of club baseball in this state will lend itself to that. I think going forward, we're going to see this more often. Because I actually thought there were other guys that were going to get taken. Arrowhead has an outfielder, Dominic Clemente, who's going to Michigan. Ryan Schmidt, who's a little undersized, but still maybe the best pitcher in the state. I mean, he's definitely in the conversation. Going to Illinois. So I thought those guys might get drafted too. I mean, it wasn't necessarily a shock that they weren't, especially as you get past a certain threshold. You're not going to see as many high school guys going to high-level programs because teams know those guys are not going to sign for the slot amount value of the pick that they're about to make, so they just pass on them and let them go to their college programs because they know that's what they're going to do anyway. But there is sort of a bumper crop of highly talented high school kids. I mean, Alec Marsh, who's going to Arizona State, we didn't hear his name, and that's another guy that we've talked about in recent years and might talk about again in a couple years. You had guys at Whitewater who were taken. Austin Jones, formerly of Wauwatosa West, who's now at Whitewater. He was drafted. So I think the proliferation of like Styx Academy and these summer baseball leagues are creating a better form of baseball player in the state of Wisconsin, where it's kind of a hard thing to do.
Yeah, and the big one down in Racine and Kenosha is Hitters
yeah.
Academy, and that's where Gavin Lux was. That's where Justin Levy was. So there's. You know, and that's the crazy thing for me is that these kids are all friends, too, that, like, they play out of season, and they played with each other their whole life, but although they go to, since they go to different schools, we don't really think of them as, you know, being buds or whatever, but as it turns out, you know, like, Gavin Lux posted a picture with two other guys who got drafted the night that he got drafted. So that was pretty crazy for me to see.
Yeah, good point. Not even just with the Wisconsin kids, but when I talked to Nate Brown of Arrowhead about his selection, and Nate Brown's almost certainly going to go to the University of Florida and not start his career with the Yankees, but he knew Corey Ray, the guy who was taken by the Brewers. And Corey Ray apparently has connections with the Hitters program and has been in Wisconsin playing before, and I mean, I didn't know that. So I guess, like you said, it's sort of these guys are friends not just with other elite players in the state, but also beyond the state, too. It's become sort of its own culture thanks to the club part of the sport.
Yeah, so it was a nice weekend for Wisconsin sports and Wisconsin kids, which is cool. Keller's story. Keller went to Germantown High School, was state player of the year in 2012, and then went on to UWM, and he will leave the program. He was a senior last year. He will leave the program as basically having almost every single pitching record that you can. Innings pitched, wins. He set season records. He set career records. He set basically everything. And then it makes it even crazier to think that somebody who's that good and will set every record was picked in the 39th round.
I know.
And another, you know, it's just like if he's the best in UWM history and that's when he gets picked, that's crazy. Not to mention, on the other side of that, somebody who set every hitting record at UWM this year was Luke Mateer, didn't get drafted at all. And they thought he was, I mean, a guarantee. I just talked to Brian. He thought Luke was going to get drafted in like the 10th round, but didn't get drafted at all. It's just crazy how the draft works.
It's different. I think we've said this before. It's different from the basketball and football draft in that the talent that's going to get selected, those guys are on everybody's radar. Right down to the 7th round, the final round of the NFL draft, you've heard of, not as fans, we haven't heard of any of these people, but the front office staff, they've heard of all these guys. But when you have 40 rounds of 30 picks each, 32 picks each, there are guys getting drafted that are getting drafted simply because they know the right person. A scout was checking out some other player and happened to come across this guy, and they developed a little bit of a relationship. I mean, it's different than those other leagues where they're really sort of keeping an eye on what other teams are doing and trying to make sure that they get their guy before the other team jumps in. In most cases, especially after the first few rounds, it's purely just, do they have a relationship with a scout, an area scout? Teams employ just countless area scouts that go to these different parts of the country to basically find these kids, to uncover rocks, to find the best baseball talent. And frequently there's only one team, maybe two, that's on a particular kid. So it doesn't mean that the best players in the country were drafted. It just means that the kids that had connections were taken.
Yeah, and I think, again, baseball's so interesting because they're just claiming dibs on players. I mean, this is for, you know, players who might reach the majors in like 5 years. It's just purely potential based.
Long-term investments.
And it's so interesting with signability. It's such a huge word because it is such a huge thing in the draft where they're worried about whether or not a player is going to sign. And players getting assigned slot values is one thing where you can't really differ too much from what they're assigned based on where they got picked. But the rule is you can either get picked out of high school. And if you don't get picked out of high school, you have to go to college for 3 years. You can't get picked after a freshman or sophomore year. And that's just crazy to what they do where, like you said, they know that they're not going to take a high school player late in the draft because why would you take such a low slot value with the low signing bonus and the low chance as opposed to a senior, somebody like Brian Keller, who really doesn't have many options. You know, his choice is to play professional ball. He doesn't have much negotiating room. And then I was also reminded, your story about Nate Brown was fantastic, where he's committed to Florida, and he really only got drafted because Florida was on TV, right?
Yeah, the way he describes it. Now, he had a relationship with the area scout, Steve Lemke, and what Brown relayed from Lemke is that they were kind of just going over their last few picks. Florida came on the TV. Nate Brown was actually watching the game because he's going there. He's interested. And they said, well, this kid, he's going to Florida. Speaking of Florida, let's just take him with our 40th pick. I mean, it was very flippant. Obviously they'd done some homework on this guy. He wasn't just a name that they were just throwing at a wall, but it was more of...
It's not the way that you and I make our final selections of fantasy football.
No. That's correct. Unless I'm picking a kicker, in which case any kicker will do. But it's sort of like, what he called it was a courtesy pick. Just, hey, thanks for working with us. We appreciate that you were communicative with us. We think in 3 years you're going to be a great talent. That draft selection doesn't buy the Yankees any sorts of rights or anything. In 3 years, anybody's going to be able to draft Nate Brown again. But it's still, I guess, some sort of act of goodwill. And I guess if you're a team that already has drafted probably 25 to 30 players that are going to sign, you're not necessarily in the market for more. So you're probably just filling out your draft picks in sort of a very cursory way. It's not necessarily for a guy that you're going to get into the system.
Yeah, building goodwill is kind of a crazy way to approach the end of a professional draft.
Yeah, I don't actually get it, really, because it doesn't really get the Yankees anything other than to say, hey, thanks for working with us. I mean, I don't know. It's still cool to hear your name called, even if you know that's not what you're going to start your career doing.
That's crazy.
So we'll have to keep an eye on Brian Keller. It's an extreme long shot for somebody in the 39th round to make it to the show, but it does happen occasionally. Unsigned guys or undrafted guys make it occasionally as well, so it should be an interesting journey for him. And meanwhile, we'll keep an eye on Nate Brown and his Arrowhead teammates, both at the state tournament this weekend and then again in college. They, in 3 years, will have a chance to be drafted again.
I think like Michael Fiers might have been like a 26th round pick, and when he came up, that was a crazy story.
Yes.
Like, how did he make it? So
yeah, so that is it gets long shotty very very quickly in the draft, even outside of the first 10 rounds. There just aren't that many guys that make it to the big leagues. Plenty of guys make it that are not drafted, that are coming from foreign countries, that are not subject to the draft rules. But there just aren't that many guys that go through the draft outside of round 10. I think Corey Hart might have been an 11th round pick or something, and that was surprising. So it's a tough road to hoe, but it does happen for guys. Well, speaking of baseball, or really any of the spring sports in the WIAA landscape, we have a lot going on, as we've had the past couple weeks. State soccer is this weekend, And we just finished state softball. Congrats to New Berlin West for winning the Division II state championship from the Milwaukee area. But it's gotten me thinking a little bit. This is a touchy topic, but what frequently happens, and it has happened again in girls soccer and golf in particular, is that you get certain sectionals that are just loaded up with the top teams in the state. For example, in golf, in one of the sectionals, the Marquette sectional, Marquette ended up winning the state boys golf championship. Marquette was in there, number one team
and
in the state.
And tennis, by the way.
Oh, yeah, and in tennis. This is what they do.
Again.
Yeah, golf is not necessarily Marquette's, like, to lose every year. But tennis, if Marquette doesn't win, something surprising happened. Same with boys volleyball, although they haven't necessarily stayed on the top of the mountain there, but they have a dynasty to lean back on there. But anyway, in golf, the number one team in the state, the number three team in the state, Arrowhead, they're the two state qualifiers. You got the number seven team in the state. You've got an honorable mention team. That's four teams out of the eight that even make it to the sectional are in that group. I look at another Milwaukee sectional, the one won by Brookfield Central. Brookfield Central is a nice team, honorable mention in the state, and nobody else is ranked in there. And that's just one example. It's anecdotal. But I have to wonder to myself if there's any way that we could come up with a model from the WIAA that sort of takes rankings into account, if not year to year, because I think that's an unfair way to do it, but somehow like set the sectionals later in the year. This is not a problem in football where they literally know who they're playing a week before they open the playoffs. I don't know why in other sports it is so important that every sectional be set up really a full year in advance, because you just get too much power concentrated in one sectional over the other. Arrowhead got defeated right away. Didn't even make it to the sectional in girls soccer. They're a top five team. You only rank five teams in Division I. And they're a state-ranked team that didn't even make it to the sectional. They got beat by the number two team in the state, Divine Savior Holy Angels, which beat the number one team in the state in penalty kicks in a sectional semifinal. They didn't even get to go to the sectional final because the top two teams in the state met. And I just wonder if there's any way we can do it, especially in a metro area where we have multiple sectionals, and we would be able to move teams back and forth. Say you identify the two Milwaukee sectionals, you could say, let's spread the wealth a little bit. Maybe there's two Madison sectionals, let's spread the wealth a little bit. It wouldn't work across the state, which makes it tricky, but I have to wonder if there's a model where we can pull this off and not have so much concentration of talent in one pool.
Well, here's the thing. You would complain about football, too. I mean, we do complain about football, too. Those are literally announced the week before they play, and there are still complaints because you still need to factor in geography somewhat. I mean, you can't just say there's two Milwaukee sectionals, because it's not that easy. There is, I mean, and I think there should be a northern part of Milwaukee, a western part of Milwaukee, a southern part of Milwaukee. I mean, it matters for somebody in Port Washington playing in Kenosha. I mean, that matters. There's a reason that Port Washington is associated with Mequon, Cedarburg, even the Germantown and Falls, because it's a lot easier. And if these games are on Tuesday and Friday nights, that matters. So I think it's a good principle, but we would still complain no matter how it's set up. I still don't think there's an altogether fair way to do it. And then even then, I still just don't – you're going to have upsets. I mean, that's what make us watch sports is – for when a 2 beats a 1 and when a 7 beats a 1. I mean, when you're taking these teams out, it does suck because you would like to see 1 versus 2 in the state final. But that doesn't mean that seeing 1 versus 2 beforehand is a bad thing, because it gives another team a chance to play the hero. It gives another team a chance that, you know, you could argue whether or not they actually deserve it, but they certainly would earn it. And I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Inevitably, geography is going to get in the way at some point, and it's hard to know where that line is going to be. I would look back at the past few years, or several years, and feel as though the geography component is eroding away a little bit. You now see, for example, Division III softball. There used to be two regionals where there was a Milwaukee regional and sort of a northern Wisconsin regional. They now see that out as a sectional. And you will have, in the first and second round, teams traveling a pretty healthy distance, maybe a couple hours, to play their game. The same thing happens in basketball, where you seed sectionals that involve Madison and the Milwaukee area. That happens a lot, where teams wind up traveling. Just this past year, Hamilton played a second round game at Bayport, Sussex Hamilton and Bayport. I feel like there's sort of a slow understanding that geography isn't quite as crucial as it used to be. Obviously, you don't want guys from DC, Everest, or even further north, the northern parts of the state, traveling to Kenosha. You don't want that. But I still feel like there is wiggle room here where we can get closer to the ideal. Like, it used to be that the WIA didn't even just tell you who your sectional opponents were. They told you who your first round opponent was. It used to be in the 90s even that you knew who your first round opponent was in the playoffs the day you got your uniform and started practicing. It was all predetermined. And I think we can all agree that that's not healthy. I mean, there should be some recognition of what you did during the regular season. Otherwise, your season is literally one game long. It could be just one game. Nothing else matters. I feel as though we kind of have reached a point where the information exchange is good.
I think...
Yes, you have a protest?
It's starting to make a little more sense, just in the sense that... Again, I don't think we need it, but I think it is doable, because... For something like golf, who cares who your opponents are? There's absolutely no need to predetermine those. They probably do need to pre-reserve the golf courses, and therefore maybe the hosts, which means, okay, so Marquette is a host, Homestead is a host, Arrowhead is a host, which means those three can't be in the same sectional. But even then, I don't even think you would need to assign hosts. I think you have a pool of teams that are willing to host, and you reserve the actual courses purely based on geography, because in golf, it doesn't matter who your first opponent is. I mean, in there are very few sports where I feel like scouting is at all necessary. Football, absolutely. Even then, we've proven that we can do it on 3 or 4 days' notice. Basketball, I think it helps to know, but tennis doesn't do you really any good to scout, does it? I mean, I can't imagine it would. Soccer, I could see it being important, but again, I don't think that's anything that, you know, a week or two advance notice could help with getting game tape. So you've softened me a little bit just on the fact that I think it could be easy to do, but I don't know if you can convince me that it's at all necessary to do. I understand that soccer sectional was tough. Again, with all those golf teams that I mentioned, and they were all really good teams. So I get that there sometimes are loaded sectionals, but to me that doesn't dilute the process of crowning a champion, because I feel like whoever the state tournament field is has earned it. Yes, there might be stronger teams and weaker teams, but I still, that's not enough for me to complain.
Yeah, and it does come down a little bit to the sort of meta argument of what is the WIAA seeking to do? And in the eyes of the WIAA, this is pretty much my opinion, but my educated opinion, every school is equal. It doesn't matter if you're a big school, a little school, a school from Milwaukee, a school from the far corners of the state, every school is equal and has a fair chance. We're not going to think about third-party rankings. We're not going to think about, you know, your schedule, nothing matters. We're just going to do it based on our rough geography configuring and let the chips fall where they may. And it doesn't matter because, like you said, the state champ is the state champ. They've beaten everybody that was before them to take the title. My thing has been in the past, well, you also reward the second place finisher. You also give out a silver ball.
Yeah.
And do those teams typically deserve to be there? Well, no, not in all cases, because sometimes that team had a much easier path to get to state or even get to the championship than the teams that were left on the doorstep in the quarters and the semis. That comes back to reseeding state tournaments a little bit too, but even before that. And I guess I would feel, I don't feel like one time, 1 year, if you get something like this, it's that big a deal. Geography is just, it's going to have those quirks and everything goes in cycles, and maybe the following year that just isn't that tough of a sectional with the very same teams. But this happens year over year over year over year, where you get great tennis teams, great golf teams, great soccer teams that don't even have a chance. And if it's not about every school being equal, if you really want to see the best teams in the state get to the state tournament, which is just as big an achievement at most schools as winning a championship, then I would say you really need to start looking at ways that you can do more to get the better teams in position to get to state.
I agree, because getting to the state tournament in whatever sport is an experience, and you want to, I think there's two facets there. One, you probably want the best matchup. You probably want 1 versus 2. And just going to the state tournament is an experience that is worth it for a lot of kids. And what better way to decide who goes than who is honestly the most deserving to be there? So I get that. But also, you can't structure sectionals so that it's 1 versus 2 against, you know, on opposite sides of the bracket, because in sports, and especially in high school sports, there is no guarantee that Becky from Germantown is going to perform the way that she should, or that Jake from Greenfield is going to perform the way that they should, and the best team or best player is going to win. It's unpredictable for a reason. And I think that if you promote regional rivalries and regional competition in terms of proximity of teams, then I feel like that is the best way to make sure that the competition is fair, because those are lines that had been drawn at the beginning of the year. You knew who you were up against. They're mostly arbitrary. I say mostly because they do take some competition into consideration. But it's just, it's to me, it's not enough to say, all right, we're trying to set up one versus two, because there's no guarantee that it's going to be set up as one versus two.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, there's an issue of, well, who's judging? Is it 15 coaches around the state, and those aren't appointed by the WIAA? And there's a lot of worms creeping out of the can that make this difficult. And could you do things for?
And I think that if you talk about rankings, though, you know, let's say that they do decide to do everything by rankings. I am part of the media. I get it, but I would have no problem. I don't know how anybody could accuse any bias if a state tournament comes up. Let's say it's state soccer. That you have a state poll of media members who cover prep sports, that they rank the teams. I mean, that is legitimately our job, is to keep a pulse on all these teams. So I would have no problem with that, and especially if it's a statewide poll. Yes, there are more reporters in bigger cities, but that shouldn't affect. I mean, there are more teams to rank too. So I would have no problem with that if they decide that should be the case.
At the same time, I wouldn't advocate for that. It's one of the reasons I stopped voting in the football poll. I just didn't feel like I was doing a credible job below, like, Division III. Once you get outside of Milwaukee, I don't know which teams are good. I'm never going to see them, especially in football where there's only 9 games a year. You just physically can't do it.
Yeah, but
I don't feel comfortable doing that. And I would bet that most people aren't good enough, aren't educated enough at any particular sport where they would be able to do that.
I think that's true to some degree, especially with the lower divisions that you talked about. But also, information is so much more easily attained these days. I mean,
I agree with that. Yeah,
I mean, there have been nights where I've been streaming football games, you know, from Hudson, you know, from clear across the state. So it is possible to at least be educated. Of course, it wouldn't be perfect, but guess what? I have a friend named JR who's complaining about a system that isn't perfect right now either.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The more information, there's so much more information out there. We don't have to behave like we're still in the 1980s. And even if it's still imperfect, I've always said, is a team really going to complain? Because in the previous model, when it was all preset, they might have gone to state. And even though they're the 10th best team, and if we put two sectional side by side and they don't really deserve to go to state, are they really going to be mad if we insert some information to spread things out more evenly? I don't see how you could be. I feel like more information should be used, but I think we're a long way away from that.
I think you have found a decent to above decent solution to something that is not a problem.
Says you. Let's go ahead and get to this interview that I sat down with Greenfield head basketball coach Kyle Johnson. He coached at West Bend West last year, played his high school days at Greendale. Football, basketball standout. Really great time chatting with him about trying to turn around a Greenfield program that hasn't been among the elite in the Woodland Conference the last few years, but certainly has the tools to get there. So here is my conversation with Kyle. My guest is the new head basketball coach at Greenfield High School, Kyle Johnson, former multi-sport athlete at Greendale High School, an assistant coach with Greendale when they went to the state basketball tournament just a couple years ago, and also a recent head coach at West Bend West. Kyle, welcome back to the Woodland Conference. It was a pretty brief stop elsewhere, and now you're back. This has got to be pretty familiar for you.
Yeah, it's very familiar. I'm excited to get the opportunity to coach in the Woodland Conference, and I'm excited for the great opportunity we have at Greenfield with the tough-nosed kids we have, and we can really build this program back up to where we want to be.
You said in the article that we put in Now Newspapers last week that you and your brother speak on a regular basis about coaching theory and strategy. Your brother has led Greendale to back-to-back state tournament appearances. Now that you're Greenfield, are those conversations going to have to be a little more guarded going forward? I mean, I'm sure you could still talk about plenty, but you guys are rivals now.
Yeah, we like to joke around now with each other. We call each other frenemies. So, we're very competitive at the house, or just in our family and generation. So, I don't think we'll be as guarded as, some people will say. We'll still tell each other things and, you know, try to help each other out as much as we possibly can. But obviously the week, we play each other will be very quiet between
us. Sure. You had kind of a front row view to Greendale's run of success there, and it's really still continuing. I mean, there's still some great players there. Was that a little bit of a surprise? Because when Ryan took over in 2012, Pius had just gone to the tournament, to the Division I tournament. Eisenhower was very good, and yet 1 year later, he gets Greendale to the state tournament, and you were part of that staff as well. Some great players were there, like Jordan Perez comes to mind, you know, Nate Thompson, plenty of great players. But was that still a little bit of a surprise?
I'm going to tell you, no, it wasn't a surprise, just because of how hard these kids worked and because we know the success of Greendale. We know the talent that Greendale has been there, not only because we went to high school there, look at the football program inside and out. They're always athletic, always dominant, always ready to take the next level. And, you know, those kids are in the building. It's just getting them and was getting them to have the fun and enjoy basketball and have the success that they can have in football to basketball. And Ryan did a tremendous job, and that's something that I learned a lot from, with getting athletes and getting certain kids out and playing basketball. And like another example is that Mitch Breeze, what a phenomenal athlete he was. And he was probably one of the best defensive players I've seen in high school basketball around the state of Wisconsin.
So that actually then kind of leads into Greenfield a little bit, which is almost literally up the road from Greendale, just a couple miles. And Greenfield, despite having the largest enrollment of any of the Woodland schools, has not had that success on the basketball court. They've got pockets of success in other sports. But I know you haven't been there per se, and you're new to the building and to the culture there, but what do you think it is that has prevented them from taking that step with the kids they have, and what is it you think you can bring to the table to sort of help them on that journey?
Well, to help them on the journey is just, you know, getting the kids excited about basketball. You know, explaining that multiple sports is huge in that standpoint, and how you can get the top athletes in all the sports to come in and play one and do those sort of things. Look, they just had a great success with Joe Cook there at at Greenfield in football. So just imagine the success that they're going to have there and turn that into basketball. These kids are hardworking, and that's what's going to take you and drive you too far and make you successful. The harder working you are, if you outwork kids, you're going to go far. And I have a feeling that these kids are going to do that, and it's going to be fun and successful to watch.
You come to Greenfield after 1 year at West Bend West. It's not unusual for a coach to be in a situation for 1 year or 2 years and have something else come along. We have that a lot in our area in all sports. And then there can be hurt feelings because a coach is only in a place for a short amount of time. That's got to be a really tough decision-making process. What was it for you? I mean, how difficult was it? Because you'd just gotten there, and now you had this opportunity, which is kind of irresistible. Like, how did you sort of come up, how did you sort of rectify all of that?
I won't lie. It was a little stressful, a little tough leaving some of those kids because, you know, the relationships that were built over the year, the excitement that the community had, the program just, you know, the culture being changed and everyone coming to basketball games. I mean, we won, I know we only won 9 games. That doesn't seem like a lot, but from them not being able to win 9 games in the long term that they had and to be in games, like we lost to West Bend, we lost to Whitefish Bay by 1 point, and then went to the sectional final. We lost to Menominee Falls, who's in the greater metro, by 2. We were up against Marquette at 1 at half. I mean, so our kids played hard, and Marquette went to state in the Division I, and they were very successful in the greater metro. And that just puts testament of hard work and how good kids can really be and resilient and believing and doing the. And that's what we're going to install right away at Greenfield and get that going. And, you know, we're going to show a lot of excitement. There's a lot of talent in Greenfield, and it's going to be to be exciting putting the hard work and effort together for these kids.
Probably, I probably know the answer to this, but West Bend West being in the Little Ten, the Little Ten is pretty much getting blown up here in a couple of years with schools going to all different directions. How sort of was the feeling about that around West Bend? I imagine they thought it was pretty inevitable that the Little Ten had a shelf life and that they would end up someplace like the North Shore, which is where West Bend schools will be headed.
Yeah, there wasn't really too much talk about it. I think they like it a little bit better going in the North Shore just because of the drives. I know that going from like West Bend to go to play, you know, Watertown, Oconomowoc, Beaver Dam, your travel time is a lot different. So you're not going to get the students, you know, that to go to certain Tuesday night games or Thursday night games that some of the Little Ten had. So that was a little disappointing, and you know, you didn't get the excitement you wanted to. But the close ones that all the kids were at, so I think that's going to help and down that path, and it's going to help for travel and kids to come watch. And that's what high school sports are all about.
Your trip, if you were a high school athlete to Greenfield, would not have been long at all. You barely would have been on the bus. So
yeah.
what were those rivalries like with Greendale and Greenfield? I mean, they may not cross paths all the time because Greenfield's D1. Greendale typically has been D2 in a lot of things. What do you have any memories of matching up with Greenfield when you were in high school?
Oh, absolutely. I have many memories. One from my freshman year, being on varsity with my brother for basketball. A couple of those kids played AU with my brother, so we knew them personally. So there was just a little rivalry with like Danny Kwiatkowski, John Wozak, Butts. There was a lot of guys that had a little bit of rivalry because they played with my brother in AU. And myself growing up, I looked up to be one of those players, you know, and playing them was a big rivalry. Then the following year when I was a sophomore, we were playing David Keene's age, and that's when Greenfield last won the Woodland Conference, and we beat them at our place, and you know, we lost them a little bit at their place by a couple points, but it just shows excitement. And we weren't all in my sophomore year all that great, and kind of had no business playing against Greenfield with the talent that they had. They ended up losing in the sectional semis to Whitnall that year with Pelkoffer, Dwyer, Kenny Allen when they went to state. So that team was just loaded with talent, so it was exciting for there. And then the following junior and senior year, we had a transfer actually from Greenfield come over to Greendale. So you can imagine the excitement level versus trying to play us because of the transfer in Brandon Rex and how great of a basketball player he was in high school. So it was just exciting to be around that sort of atmosphere, and towns kind of really get after each other when they play.
So you, I covered you in high school, so I always feel a little bit old when I start talking to those players as they get to their late 20s and start coaching and whatnot. But one memory I have of your career doesn't come against Greenfield, but it comes against New Berlin West, and I swear the craziest basketball game I've ever seen. And I wish I still had the story from the game because I don't have all the details, I think, as solidly as I'd like. But and you could probably help me with this because I think you still keep up with some of the guys that were involved in this game and remember what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I remember like it was yesterday. I still talk to Jason Aberkamp, actually daily. We're very close, and especially with Justin Kelvert, all those guys who played in that game, Josh Fabian. So, you know, I still like to give Jason a hard time with that game, being down one without the ball and 1 second left, and we still figured out a way to pull out and get the victory.
Yeah, and it really all started with 8 seconds left when Justin Kelvert throws up a desperation. He didn't know how much time was left. Threw up a desperation heave for you guys that was way off the mark, but he got called for traveling.
Yes.
So that put the ball back in New Berlin West's hands. They inbound. They miss a couple free throws. I think they had another set of free throws somehow in that last 8 seconds. And then, like you said, they're inbounding with 1 second left, sideline near half court. And you totally conned. I think statute of limitations is okay on this, but you definitely talked the referee into a foul on Aberkamp that fouled him out and gave you guys possession, leading into a 3-pointer by you at the buzzer to win the game.
Yeah, that was. It's kind of lucky. It's crazy. I played AU basketball with Jason for 5 years, so I kind of knew we played together. Really, we knew each other inside and out. So I kind of knew what his hot buttons were, is what I like to call them. And how he kind of flails a little bit. So I told Justin, I said, I'm going to guard Jason. He kind of looked at me like, what? No, you're not. I said, yes, I am. So I guarded Jason, and I kind of did a little acting job. I'm not going to lie. And Jason kind of flailed his elbow. I got the foul. We got the ball back, and next thing you know, Mike Joyce sets a great screen for me, and I ended up hitting the shot.
Yeah, I will not forget that moment. I was there by myself covering the game, and at that point, I'm just looking around for people to engage with. After that, like, did that just happen?
Yeah.
That's not possible.
Yeah, it's something we still talk about. I mean, we're good friends with the Avercamps, so it really irks them whenever we see them. We talk to them a little bit about that, and sometimes show the video that we have and send it to them.
Jason Avercamp, of course, went on to play for UW-Milwaukee,
yeah.
So he played some college ball. You, of course, were a very good football player as well, quarterback of the Panthers team. That your team's really kind of got the ball rolling. Greendale's been a powerhouse. I mean, I'm sure they had some good teams before you were there as well, but really has been on this run since you were there.
Yeah.
But is there a more snake-bitten football program than the Greendale Panthers? Two just, like, gut-wrenching state title losses and a litany of close calls in between. It's been a really crazy run for them.
Yeah, it is. It just shows you how hard it is, you know, how successful one program can be and how hard it is to actually come home with the gold ball, whether it's basketball, baseball, football. You know, they were so talented in football. They lost both games by the last minute and a half. And, you know, we could go all back and forth. Said games could have been, should have been won. But, I mean, it's very hard to get there. And it just shows you once you get to state or once you get there, you have a really good program and you have a really good team at that year.
What is your biggest sports memory overall from your high school days? Was it playing with the football team? Was it basketball?
Man, that's tough. I mean, there are so many great memories because of how successful we were in all sports. You know, one of my favorite memories probably is the Eisenhower game. I know we lost that one, but that's a great memory there. Beating Jason Avercamp was always it was always good. There are so many great memories in football. You know. Getting there, battling through, winning our first two playoff games, and then losing to Wisconsin Lutheran 55 to like 38. I mean, it was a shootout. They were just better than us that year. I mean, all sports in general, I have so many great memories on, and we were just successful, and it was a great appreciation for our hardworking the friends and teammates that we had.
So when you do get to face off with your brother, when Greenfield plays Greendale, you said this in the paper, and it is kind of cliche that it is just one of 22 games, but I know Greenfield's in a place where they're still trying to build up toward that. They're not going to be worried about Greendale as a conference champion, you know, like their chief competition for that. But still, that's going to be a really interesting experience for, I imagine, both of you guys.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. I'm definitely going to, and I know our kids are already. We're gonna get this rivalry back to where it's supposed to be. I know it's been down for the past couple of years here, but we really want to get that Greendale-Greenfield rivalry back and get the kids, the town, everyone excited to hopefully, you know, be a tight, physical, successful game for both sides.
All right, sir. Good luck with everything. Thanks very much for joining me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I do appreciate that, and I look forward to working with you here along the road.
All right, JP, what's going on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel this week?
What's going on this week? Well, I am chasing down every MLB draft prospect ever this week, so I'll try and get that to everybody on Sports Weekly Tuesday at 6 p.m. Also, a story that you and I had discussed, a powerlifter out of Arrowhead High School, who not only in her first year of competition, not only did she win a state title, but won a national title as well, and is now heading to Poland for the world competition. Little girl named Jordan Panton, which is just, it's fantastic to see such a petite frame, who's squatting and deadlifting 200, 300, 400 pounds.
Yeah, she's been very talented. She's been doing this for a while, competing all around around the world. We've got a couple stories this week on some state lacrosse championships. Arrowhead Red won the girls' title for the third straight year. Catholic Memorial Boys won the Division II title. Kettle Moraine won an absolute thriller. First title in boys' lacrosse program history. They rallied back from I think, four down in the late going, tied it, won it in overtime. Logan Crines is the name of the guy who had the game-winning shot. So I think 13-12 was the final score. Ridiculous game. So you should check out the game story from LakeCountryNow.com. We'll also have coverage of Arrowhead at State Baseball. Check me out on Twitter. I'm Gonna try to pull out the Snapchat, see if we can get a little of that from Ooh. Fox City Stadium in Appleton. So keep an eye out on my Twitter account at JR Radcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. And we'll keep you updated on everything that's going on there.
Very nice. You did a great job today, and I thank you for being a dear friend.
I also thank you for being a dear friend, even if it's purely superficial.
Yep. 1,000% sarcasm there.
Yeah.
1,000.
Thanks for listening to Initial Reaction, where the two of us pretend to like each other, and we will hopefully chat with you again next week.
All right. Bye, friends.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.